Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by Mobius Strip Press. I am G.R. Mobley. If you go to my site, reclaimingtherepublic.org, you will have access to my content and support documents and links. This is an educational grassroots program leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back and happy Constitution Day. It's Constitution Week, but today is the day and the anniversary that the framers, and when I say the framers, I'm talking about the constitutional framers, actually signed the Constitution. Now, there were some great men that refused to sign that, and one of those was George Mason. I actually had a good conversation with Keith Borders today. And so it had a lot to do with the whole slave issue and so forth. And so anyway, let me get into, because I could easily go down a lot of different tangents, but I don't want to, because what I want to do is I want to focus on the Constitution today. It's not very often that I actually sit down and focus on reading it, but today, and probably tomorrow, and whatever it takes to get through this, I want to go through the Constitution with you personally and identify the parts of the Constitution that are being violated and how they're being violated. And what I have done is I have posted John Roland's highlighted version from the Constitution Society. You can go there. It may be harder to find, but if you go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to the Red State Talk Radio podcast page and you scroll down past the podcasts, you will find the PDF that is the highlighted portion. You kind of see, you know, the fact that it's the Constitution. So it should be easy for you to find. It shouldn't be that hard. So what I want to do is go through that today, and if we can get through that today or tomorrow, then that'd be great, because I did have a follow-up conversation with Mitchell Nicholas Gerber, that is the champion trying to fight the Chinese organ harvesting that's going on. And so we'll come up with an update on that probably Thursday, so I'm hoping by that time I'll be able to get through the Constitution. But I got to tell you that this show is also sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org, as well as 1798Part2.org, as well as RepublicReview.org. And so the other thing that I feel that I need to do, and that's the typical, you know, groveling. If you know, I'm never above being humbled to basically ask for help. I think it's I learned a long time ago, when I knew that when I was, you know, had many blessings and was able to do a lot of different things, and when people they didn't ask, and I would, you know, come up to them and say, hey, you know, why are you denying me of blessings? And they kind of look at me like, what do you mean? And I go, well, obviously you need a little bit of help here with this. Why don't you ask me to help you so that, you know, I can receive some blessings. You think I'm going to make it all on my good looks or on my own? We need to help each other. And that's really what it is all about. So if you're looking to have an opportunity to receive some blessings, I will truly tell you that as you get engrossed in this noble cause, you will find and be able to count many blessings. But let me go forward. I do need your support. I need more people to be getting on board with this. And over time, I know it will happen. I never have the patience required to get the things when I think I need it. But the Lord always gets it to me when it is needed. I will tell you, if you have a computer and you have a phone, you'd be surprised at how powerful and how influential you can be in this process and in this system. There's no doubt in my mind that just those two devices, you can actually make a major shakeup and really bring the attention to very disparate and even important and even, you know, critical people, so that they could start understanding, wow, there really is a solution. Now, I know that most of you that are tuning in are getting to that point of going, you know, I can't refute this. This is a really solid argument. And I'm telling you, I'd invite you to go listen to my interviews with Dr. John R. Vile. You can find him on my KSBN page as well as my Red State Talk Radio podcast pages, both those pages. And listen to this constitutional professor never once refute the constitutionality of what I'm talking about. Well, with that, if you would like to help, let me just give you the information. Just send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org. And that way, you can actually become a part of the solution instead of being a part of the problem. If you didn't know, there are plenty that are actually being a part of the problem. And we like to call those the indivisibles. We like to call them the Democrats, the progressives, and what have you. So we need as many good patriots to be a part of the solution as well. And so you're more than welcome. There is plenty of room at this mantle for everybody. We can go square up, shoulder to shoulder, and move forward. And we can set up a Alexander the Great phalanx and just divide and conquer. Let me also thank you for tuning in. Today's a very special day. To me, it's a very sacred day because this is the day that our Constitution was accepted by the Constitutional Convention, signed and then promulgated, actually was sent then to Congress and then promulgated out to the Republic. But before I do that, I just want to thank you real quick for tuning in and getting the word out. As you do that, that actually does help this message get out. That helps the message grow. And that is, I think, the fundamental push or the catalyst that is going to help this message go anywhere. With that, I would also like to do a plug for the Constitution Club. It is a good online site that it will help you drill right down to your county. This is really important because this is a site that's already prepared to get into little R republicanism, recognizing the role of the county and how the county is a part of the republic within the state in making the states a republican form of government. And that's something that we need to get back to. I'd love to get into that as well, but that's definitely another point and another time. We will get into it when we read the Constitution, though. And so with that, I also want to say that there has been no sign whatsoever in the news, out my window, anywhere, that the federal government is disbanding any of its tyrannical roles, responsibilities, and powers. And so we together all have to work together in stopping this insidious encroachment upon our liberty and upon our power as states and as the sovereign people. So we've got both sovereign states and sovereign people that are, I think, integral and necessary in being the ones to stand up. Now, so getting into this Constitution, because I've still got a little bit of time left in this segment, let me go through the highlights parts. There's red, which is, indications of failures to implement, and are the red is for the most serious, orange for the second most serious is the color code, and yellow is for the third most serious. So what Roland has done, Mr. Roland, is he's identified the three different degrees, red being the most significant, but these are things that either have been failed to be implemented or that have just been, ignored or absolutely trampled on. Now, there are a few things in here as I go through this. He has not highlighted that I disagree with. And as a matter of fact, I know Keith Broders and a lot of other constitutionalists will actually support me on these things. And so when I point these things out, I'll try to help you understand who else is, in line with that, why we believe that these are violations of the Constitution as written. And so the preamble, I've got enough time to get through the preamble, and obviously there is no violations of the preamble because it's just basically kind of a setup. It's not an instrument of power or delegations or defined roles, responsibilities, or so forth. And so we, the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, and secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, do ordain and establish this Constitution for the United States of America. Now, as we get through the actual Constitution, that's the preamble. That's basically setting up what they have just done here and in providing you this Constitution and why they're doing this. And so Article 1 is the article that delineates the roles, responsibilities, and powers that will be delegated if this Constitution is ratified by 9 states. These are the powers that will be delegated to the legislative branch, and it gets into the roles and the divisions of power and so forth. Article 2 is the executive branch. Article 3 is the judiciary branch. And then Article 4, 5, 6 are administrative articles that kind of explain, you know, either additional powers and or limitations and so forth. And so what we will do is we will get into Article 1 at the very top, and it says, and this is a violation already because this has been trampled on by both the Supreme Court as well as the President. Section 1, all legislative powers herein granted shall be vested in Congress of the United States, which shall consist of a Senate and House of Representatives. The whole point that is highlighted here is the fact that the legislative powers have been usurped by the Supreme Court by them writing laws, which they have no power to do so per this Constitution, and with the presidents writing executive orders in legislating and creating laws. That is another big violation. So that's why it is highlighted in red, because those are egregious violations. So we'll be back after word from our sponsors and getting into Section 2 of Article 1. Thank you so much. Most people resist change, but how would you like to be rewarded in at least 2 ways for considering a new dentist? Dr. Tracy believes your smile is a reflection upon him, and that is a mutually shared reward between both him and you. Another reward is improving your overall health by working with your dentist like Dr. Tracy and developing a strategy in maintaining your dental health. But how would you like a direct incentive in considering a new dentist? Dr. Tracy and his staff from time to time offer a special referral program. For every new patient you refer who becomes a patient, Dr. Tracy will reward you with $50 off your dental work. Consequently, if you refer 5 people, that's $250 off your dental work. Give them a call and ask for the details and the availability of the referral program by calling 466-6614 or go to VonTracyDDS.com. Again, that's 466-6614 or sign up at VonTracyDDS.com. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. Okay, so the number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK or 215-867-8255. Do not forget my 3 C's when you dial in. And let's get on with the dialogue. And so where I just left off was I read Article 1 and Article 1, Section 1. Now we're going into Article 1, Section 2. There are a total of 10 sections in Article 1. And that's just because this is the largest body of the federal government or branch, as well as this is the most powerful. This is the sovereign of the federal government. As we read through the ratification debates, it was very clear that the framers understood who the sovereigns were. in a Republican form of government, the representatives of the people are the sovereigns. The president is not the sovereign. He has an executive responsibility of carrying out those laws and setting the tenor for foreign affairs, those types of things. And the Supreme Court is literally there to ensure that the laws are being followed as written, not as interpreted. Anyway, so Section 2, the House of Representatives shall be composed of members chosen every second year by the people of the several states, and the electors in each state shall have the qualifications requisite for electors of the most numerous branch of the state legislature. No person shall be representative who shall not have attained the age of 25 years and been 7 years a citizen of the United States, and who shall not, when elected, be an inhabitant of the state in which he shall be chosen. So that's how Hillary was able to just move straight up to New York without having a long-term residency and literally become a senator in right after Billy's presidential term. She was able to get into the Senate immediately thereafter, because a lot of states, for governors and so forth, they have like 5 years or even longer for residency requirements. Now, here's one we're going to get into that's actually being violated, and it is representatives and direct taxes shall be apportioned, in other words, evenly divided among the several states, which may be included within this union according to their representative numbers. Now, the part that's being violated is that how they assign taxes. They now have progressive taxes that is actually directed towards the individual. The 16th Amendment allows for the taxation of incomes of individuals, but it does not have and did not change this portion of the apportionment to make sure that it was uniformly and evenly applied. And so they, even though they did create the progressive income tax and went after people, I think if I remember correctly, they were in the 70 percentile range, if not 90 percentile range, within about 7 years of implementing the income tax. In other words, if you were making a certain dollar amount, then you were being taxed 90% of your income. That's how progressive it was back then. And so they did not change this portion of the Constitution, which means it shall be apportioned among the several states. In other words, the taxes weren't to be taxed directly to the people. The taxes are to be divided up evenly based on, and the typical rule is based on population. So if your population is of such, then they break it down and your tax levy or your tax that you have to pay is this much. So anyway, let me keep going. Including those bound to service for a term of years and excluding Indians not taxed, 3/5, and this is the apportionment, 3/5 of all other persons. This, however, that last part, the 3/5 of all other persons, was modified by the 14th Amendment, and so we will get into that much later. The actual enumeration shall be made within 3 years after the first meeting of Congress of the United States and within every subsequent term of 10 years in such a manner as they shall by law direct. The number of representatives shall not exceed one for every 30,000. So that is a huge violation. In other words, for every 30,000 people, there should be one representative. And they broke down back in those days with the slavery, with the 3/5, they basically watered down or they reduced the amount of representatives that the South would get, because the South wanted to count their slaves entirely as people to be represented. And if you read the debate, it was very illuminating in understanding exactly, these men exactly knew what the Southern states were trying to do in bolstering themselves up in protecting their institution of slavery. And I had a really good, like I said, I had a really good talk with Keith Broders today about that at the Constitution Club. And so it's great to have these types of, you know, back channel conversations. Anyway, shall not exceed 30,000, but each state shall have at least one representative. And that is why Wyoming today. And so let me get to how this was violated. Over time, they finally got to a point where they were representing 30,000 people in every state. They finally got to a point where they were over-occupying. They didn't have enough seats in Congress anymore to provide the appropriate representation to the people. So how is this a violation? Well, they can't just make a change to what is in this Constitution by statute or regulation. And that's exactly what they did. Because by the time they hit the census or the amount of congresspersons, House of Representatives, the people that were in the House of Representatives that exceeded the seats, that was like in the early 1900s. The problem was, at that point in time, they had already deviated away from the Constitution and had no intentions in amending the Constitution. However, if they wanted to make a major change in how we the people are to be represented, they had to make an amendment. And the proof in the pudding is the 11th and the 12th Amendments, because if you go through those amendments, you will find that the 12th Amendment is how they changed the 1800 process of the Electoral College because of the Adams-Jefferson campaign. They held to the standard. If they were going to change the Electoral College in how they were to select the president, which is a part of this, and we'll get into this, when they made those minute changes, they still amended the Constitution and followed the Article 5 process. So down the road, all of a sudden, they didn't have to. Well, show me in the Constitution and the amendments that the federal government was no longer required to follow the Article 5 process. It's not there, my friends. They've never been given a pass to be able to use regulations and statutes to change. And so that's why in the 1860s, they started violating with regulation and statute the Electoral College. They started violating the Constitution regularly with acts, regulations, and statutes. And so that's how we've gotten into this huge mess. And the Supreme Court has created unconstitutional footings to allow them to do this. So anyway, then they go through and say, okay, so every state has to have at least one representative. So if you get to a point where you have a state that doesn't have 30,000 people, well, they at least get one. And so, what they do is then they break down the states and how they are to do this. And so they go, and shall be made, the state of New Hampshire shall be entitled to choose 3, Massachusetts 8, Rhode Island and Providence Plantations 1, Connecticut 5, New York 6, New Jersey 4, Pennsylvania 8, Delaware 1, Maryland 6, Virginia 10, North Carolina 5, South Carolina 5, and Georgia 3. And so you can see right out the gate, the Virginia was the big dog because they had 10 representatives in Congress right out the gate. They were also the largest in physical space. So Virginia was a very critical, they were right there in the middle of the Republic. They were doing all the commerce. I mean, they were the driver of the economy at the time. So, I mean, Virginia was very critical to becoming a part of the Republic. So they go on and says, when vacancies happen in the representation of any state, the executive authority thereof shall issue writs of election to fill such vacancies. In other words, if somebody resigns, somebody gets impeached, or somebody gets killed, or what have you, there's a reason, there's an empty seat in Congress, then the governor of the state will then ensure that that person is replaced. The House of Representatives shall choose their speaker and other officers and shall have the sole power of impeachment. So they're the ones that have the whole power of being able to pull the president in and make the president accountable for high crimes and misdemeanors. Now, that's why this coming election, if you haven't been hearing the saber rattling on the left, how they just want blood, they want to. And why was it that Ryan and Boehner and supposedly the right basically took the gloves off and said, you know what, we don't care how you trample on the Constitution, President Obama, we will not impeach you. Are you kidding me? That's where this goes into that alignment on the scale of liberty, where those people who are on the far right side, or what I would call the subjugation side, the black side, those people do not care. They will kill. They'll do anything necessary to get their means. And the people on the side of liberty will allow freedom of choice and will not compel and force people to do things. I'm at a hard break. So we'll get back into Section 3 because that's where we left off, Article 1, Section 3, when we come right back. Thank you so much. Most of my listeners understand the importance in having strategic goals, but do you have a long-term strategy for your dental health? Too many people are only focused on whitening their smile. I understand the appearance of your teeth can give you confidence, but this can risk your future health in only addressing the cosmetics of your teeth, and many dentists will take your money just to do this. They say failing to plan is planning to fail, and if you don't have a long-term strategy for your teeth and dental health, then you need a new dentist. Every dentist provides a dental plan, but Dr. Tracy and his staff develops a strategy to help you maintain and restore your dental health to what it needs to be. To develop a strategy in maintaining your dental health, connect with Dr. Von Tracy, DDS.com. That's VONTRACYDDS.com. So you too can develop a strategy in maintaining your dental health. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station. That number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK, 215-867-8255. And again, don't forget those three C's. And if you're ready to call in, the lines are open. All right. So Section 3 gets into the definition of the Senate and so forth. And so there's an amendment that we will deal with that's a part of this that modified Section 3. The Senate of the United States shall be composed of two senators from each state, chosen by the legislature thereof, and that is the part that was changed, for 6 years, and each senator shall have one vote. As a matter of fact, if I have to tell you this, each of the representatives, whether they be representing the states or representing the people, they all only have one vote. But so for some reason, I don't know why they included that last part, but it's like stating the obvious. We are writing on parchment or what have you. But anywho, immediately after, and I guess maybe they needed to spell those things out, but immediately after, they shall be assembled in consequence of the first election. They shall be divided as equally as may be into three classes. The seats of the senator of the first class shall be vacated at the expiration of the second year. of the second class, the expiration of the fourth year, and the third class at the expiration of the sixth year, so that one third may be chosen every second year. And if vacancies happen by resignation or otherwise during the recess of the legislature of any state, the executive thereof may make temporary appointments until the next meeting of the legislature, which shall then fill those such vacancies. So this is the difference right here, because if the state legislatures are in recess at the time of the vacancy occurring, then the governor has the option and he has the authority by the Constitution, actually, to seat that senator until the state legislatures come back into session. So if it happens right after a session, it could actually span a whole year before the state legislatures get back into session to replace such a fallen comrade. Now, this too was also modified by the 17th Amendment because, again, senators are no longer appointed by the state legislators. So what would happen is it's basically the same thing as a congressman now. The governor will then replace the senator or the representative, and that person will sit until the next special election, which will be that following November. That person will have to run to become an elected, because they don't get to fill out their whole term if there's 4 years left on that seat's term or what have you. They will still have to run for election for filling out the rest of that term, and then because they're still in that same class, and so it doesn't change the class that they're in. So if it's just a 3 year, or even if it's just a 1 year, they will have to rerun for election when their class has to seek re-election. No person shall be a senator who shall have attained to the age of 35 or 30 years and been 9 years a citizen of the United States, and who shall not, when elected, be an inhabitant of that state for which he shall be chosen. Now, that doesn't make sense. Am I reading that right? A citizen of the United States, and who shall not, when elected, be an inhabitant of that state for which he shall be chosen. I believe what they're stating there, because to me, the way I'm reading that and the way that comes out, it's supposed to mean that at that point in time when they're elected, they have to be a resident of that state. The vice president, going on to the next paragraph, the vice president of the United States shall be the president of the Senate, but shall have no vote unless they be equally divided. So in other words, if there's 25-25 votes on a very particular bill, the vice president, the only time he can vote is when he becomes the deciding vote on an issue. Now, keep in mind that most of the real critical votes that the Senate has is not a basic majority. In other words, 50% plus one. The majority of the seats for sitting a, now the Supreme Court is there, but when it comes to the seating of cabinets and so forth, it used to require a certain majority, which was, I believe it was 60 votes, but they've been blowing all of these things away and moving the Senate back into a basic majority. And even though it may have served Trump for his presidency, it has created a vulnerability to the Republic that we do not have that higher threshold to protect, because it's easy to get that 50%. It is hard for a party to get 60%. Unless we get rid of the 17th Amendment, and we will easily be able to create a dominance, because if you look at all the red states, there's always going to be a majority of the states, or at least the way I see it in the next 50 years. I do not see the center states and these less populated states becoming very progressive. I know that the progressives are working really hard at trying to convert all of these states, but they're not doing it. They're not doing it in an effect of moving the people. They're doing it by implementing policies and so forth with, you know, rogue governors and so forth and so on. So the Senate shall choose their officers. Back to Article or Section 2. Article 1, Section 3, I'm sorry. The Senate shall choose their other officers and also a president pro tempore. In the absence of the vice president, or when he shall exercise the office of the President of the United States, the Senate shall have the sole power or try all impeachments. So in other words, if Congress, if the House of Representatives decides to impeach Trump, then it will be the Senate that will try that impeachment. And so what that means is that if the House actually flips, the Senate will have to flip to actually get an indictment or a conviction of an impeachment and unseating Trump. We had this exact same issue with President Clinton. He was impeached, but he was not tried because the Senate did not see the necessity in doing that. And I believe that was, you know, the one thing that really killed the Republicans in the upcoming election that moved Congress in 1998 towards the left. And actually, the left dominated the House from that point forward for quite a while. And so when the President of the United States is tried, the Chief Justice shall preside with the Senate, and no person shall be convicted without the concurrence of 2/3 of the members present. Do you see that threshold? They have to have 66 senators in today's count to actually convict the President of the United States. So even if the Senate flips and they do go down the path of trying, they will not be able to get a conviction of Trump. Does that make sense now? So what all it will do is create even a bigger distraction so that the deep state can continue to buy itself time as, you know, it, you know, meanders through what's remaining of Trump's presidency. So anyway, and then they'll definitely be working hard to unseat Trump so that they can get another globalist in there to help throw our Constitution aside and get America and our republic into the global governance scheme. So anyway, judgment in cases of impeachment shall not extend further than to removal from office and disqualification to hold and enjoy any office of honor, trust, or profit under the United States. But the party convicted shall nevertheless be liable and subject to indictment, trial, judgment, and punishment according to the law. So in other words, if the Senate chooses to actually convict and basically unseat the president, if that ever happened, that means that he's not actually convicted of any law. He'll actually have to be indicted and tried and then punished according to the law by a civil court, because the Senate does not go through that proceeding at all. That will have to actually go back out to the courts. Section 4 of Article 1, the times and places and manner of holding elections for senators and representatives shall be prescribed in each state by the legislature thereof. So the state legislatures control the choosing of the elections, but the Congress may at any time by law make or alter such regulations except as to the place of choosing of senators. Now that one little portion right there, the Congress may at any time by law make or alter such regulations, that has been violated over the course of the Republic. The Congress, now I've got 30 seconds left and I got the small little factor to go through before we get to Section 5. The Congress shall assemble at least once in every year and such meetings shall be on the first Monday in December. This was modified by the 20th Amendment, unless they shall by law appoint a different day. I'm not sure, I've said this before, and I'll get into it when we get into Christmas, but On Christmas Day, the first session of Congress was actually meeting and working. And so they didn't recognize Christmas back then. And so Christmas wasn't really recognized until much later. And there's reasons for that. And I will get into that when we get into the December timeframe. But we'll be right back with Article 1, Section 5 after we have a couple of words from my sponsor. Thank you so much. It's that time of year to get that dental checkup and cleaning. I know many of us are creatures of habit and we tend to settle for what we know, and many of us are procrastinators. I was that way myself with my past dentist, jumping from one dentist chair to the next. From all the hopping, I've learned that all dentists are not equal, and I would challenge you to consider checking out Dr. Von Tracy. I work hard to make a living, and I'm not one to throw my hard-earned money away on just a good dentist. That's why it took me a couple of years to find a great dentist. From the excellence of his staff to the quality of the work, Dr. Tracy is the difference. I know it's time to put standards to our loyalty, so I would ask you to give Dr. Tracy a try by setting up your next appointment with him. Just go to VONTRACYDDS.com or call them at 509-466-6614. Again, sign up at VONTRACYDDS.com. To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. Okay, if you want to join in on the dialogue, you need to call 215-TOP-TALK. That's 215-867-8255. And welcome back. What we're doing is we're reading the Constitution, because today's Constitution Day and this is Constitution Week. And so we're at Article 1, Section 5. We're reading the highlighted version that John Roland did. There's some lacking of some highlighting, so I think I may go back in there as I find some of these things and identify what we need to change and or what has been violated. But we're going to get into Section 5 that I think this right here poses a problem, because it gives the corruption control of their corruption. And it says here, each house shall be the judge of the elections, returns, and qualifications of its own members, and a majority of each shall constitute a quorum to do business. So the real problem is that each house has the ability to judge itself. And Madison clearly stated in Federalist Paper 10, no man should ever be, nor no organization or entity should ever be a judge of itself. So I do not like the fact that each house has the ability to judge of the elections, returns, and qualifications of the members. I would like to see that moved back down to the state legislatures, because I think the state legislators should control their brand of who is representing the state, as well as the state, the people of the state. And that would literally reel in behavior and so forth. So you may find that the Californians that are going into the House may still, you know, run, you know, paid, you know, have sex scandals like with Barney Frank, with his pages, his page boys, and so forth. And Massachusetts may be okay with that, but the other states don't have to be okay with that, and they can have a higher bar and have a higher standard and actually, hopefully, raise the professional decorum of each of these houses to where it should be. And I just think that there, you cannot allow the house to police itself or a person to judge themselves. And so anyway, but a smaller number may adjourn from day to day and may be authorized to compel the attendance of absent members in such manner and under such penalties as each house may provide. Each house may determine the rules and its proceedings, punish its members for disorderly behavior, and, with the concurrence of two-thirds, expel a member. So there you go. You need two-thirds of a particular house to actually expel a member. Each house, because we look at these men and women as very sacred because they've been elected by the people. And even though as repugnant as Nancy Pelosi and her unpopularity and Maxine Waters and the likes, regardless, it takes two-thirds of the House of Representatives to unseat these vile representatives. Anyway, each house, and this has been violated, each house shall keep a journal of its proceedings from time to time to publish the same. Now, at the very beginning, the Senate did not even keep a journal. Nowadays, you can find the House Journal, and I've even quoted it. There's the Congressional Globe, the Congressional Record, and the Annals of Congress, I think, is what the first one was called. But anyway, I think that the Senate has been inconsistent in some of their journal keeping and so forth, accepting such parts as may, in their judgment, require secrecy, and the yeas and nays of members of either house on any question shall, at the desire of one-fifth of those present, be entered on the journal. Neither house, during the session of Congress, shall, without the consent of the other, adjourn for more than 3 days, nor to any other place than that in which the two houses shall be sitting. In other words, sometimes they like to go somewhere for a little sabbatical or for a meeting. And so that for them to be gone and out of session and out of the area for a period of time greater than 3 days is a no-no. But they do have from time to time, and it was just recently, I had already started this show, where there was a train taking a bunch of Republicans out to a retreat area, and the train was stopped and knocked off the tracks by a garbage truck. And I think somebody was saying that that was a Democrat driving. But anyway, of course. Anywho, Section 6. The senators and representatives shall receive a compensation for their service to be ascertained by law and paid out of the Treasury of the United States. They shall, in all cases except treason, felony, and breach of the peace, be privileged from arrest during their attendance at the session of their representative houses and in going and returning from the same. In other words, they are above the law unless they commit treason or they commit a felony or a breach of the peace. Now, so they can actually be arrested for drunken disorderly or a DUI and those types of things. But if they're speeding, they cannot be arrested. They cannot be detained. Now, that doesn't mean that they can't be ticketed and or cited, but they are above the law that they can't be detained. And for any speech or debate in either house, they shall not be questioned in any other place. So, in lots of ways, they did kind of grant, the framers did kind of grant, because they really believed these men had virtue and they were noble men. I mean, Madison brought it up, and I read it last week, that, you know, they expected that the people would only elect the most virtuous of society. Now, look at how debased we have become, and look at the raunchy wretch that, you know, that keeps getting elected in some of these just terrible despotic states like California and New York and so forth. no senator or representative shall, during the time for which he was elected, be appointed to any civil office under the authority of the United States, which shall have been created or the emoluments thereof have been increased during such time, and no person holding any office under the United States shall be a member of either house during his continuance in office. In other words, you can only be a congressman, and so you can't work in making more money because, interestingly enough, when these positions were created via the Constitution and during the ratification debates, it was very clear that these people were not to be making a lot of money, unlike, you know, they are today. They've got golden parachutes and so forth. And so these people were supposed to be considered the servants of the public. This was a noble position. This wasn't a position of, you know, high salutations and pay and compensation and so forth. And so what they did was they wanted to make sure that this person couldn't be double dipping in working in the state as well as the federal government and vice versa, as well as in other federal positions. They can only serve in the capacity of a House of Representatives and or a senator, and that is it. No senator or representative shall during the time which they elect. Okay, I already read that. I'm sorry. Section 7. Now, this right here is a yellow violation, so it has been violated. All bills for raising revenue shall originate in the House of Representatives. So what this means is that there have been bills that have originated out of the Senate, and there have been actually executive orders that have caused revenues to be originated that did not originate in the House of Representatives. But the Senate, and actually, if you understand when the Supreme Court makes rulings, they actually make rulings of where the government has to spend or, you know, has to do something which requires more revenue to pay for that. So in other words, they're spending money and or they're allocating the requirement of spending money that didn't exist outside of the House of Representatives, because the House of Representatives is supposed to have the strict control over the spending and or the ability to spend money, where the Supreme Court and the President and even the Senate have violated this. Every bill which shall have passed the House of Representatives and the Senate shall, before it become law, be presented to the President of the United States. If he approved, he shall sign it, but if not, he shall return it with his objection to that house in which it should have originated. We shall enter the objections at large in their journal and proceed to reconsider it. If after such reconsideration, 2/3 of that house shall agree to pass the bill, it shall be sent together with the objections to the other house by which it shall likewise be reconsidered. And if approved by 2/3 of that house, it shall become a law without, and I'm just adding this, without the president's signature. But in all cases of the votes of both house shall be determined by yeas and nays, and in the names of the persons voting for and against the bill shall be entered on the journal of each house respectively. If any bill shall not be returned by the president within 10 days, Sunday excepted, after it shall have been presented to him, the same shall be law. So in other words, if they present a bill and the president's out on vacation and he doesn't sign it within 10 days, then it actually becomes law. In like manner, if he had signed it, unless the Congress by their adjournment prevent its return, in which case it shall not be law. So in other words, if Congress can't receive it because they're out, and it comes back and sits, then they can't, because they can't register it. That does not allow it to become law. It's pretty interesting. We're at Article 1, Section 7, and we're almost through Section 7, getting into Section 8, which is the meat, and we're going to get into these powers, the enumerated powers that have been delegated to Congress. Thank you so much. I'm G.R. Mobley. I'm Reclaiming the Republic, and I need your help, and we'll be getting back into the Constitution tomorrow for Constitution Week. God bless. I've been on the radio for a couple of years, and for over a decade, I have been providing content to help patriots understand what has to be done if we're going to save our Constitution and our Republic. Not one academic has been able to refute my argument for Republic Review, and even most conservative entertainers will not support Republic Review due to self-interest reasons. If you have not read my bullet point descriptions and executive summaries, you need to so that you can understand what we all need to do. I am trying to give patriots the necessary knowledge to take back our Constitution and Republic. Go to reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can read my bullet points and view the Republic Review flowchart. You can even order my executive summaries, books, and other content to understand the simplicity of what we have to do. This way, you will know what, why, and how to support the reclaiming of our Republic. Again, please take a look at my content on reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can become a part of the solution.